Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke. Rick Cleveland cut his teeth as a playwright working in Chicago. He went on to big things, like winning an Emmy for his writing on the political drama The West Wing. Later, it was the TV series 6 Feet Under, and more recently, the new political drama House of Cards. But despite his success on the small screen, Cleveland's latest work combines his interest in presidential politics with his love of writing for the stage. Five Presidents gets its world premiere at the Milwaukee Rep. It's set in California in 1994, where former Presidents Ford, Carter, Reagan, and Bush, along with sitting President Bill Clinton, have gathered backstage at Richard Nixon's funeral. Like in his television writing, Cleveland's play has its really funny moments and its serious political side as the presidents compare notes about their job and the unique club they belong to. Rick Cleveland is with us this morning to share the backstory. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So I gather it was a picture of the five living presidents in one place that got you thinking about this?
Yeah, I can't remember in recent memory that there have been photos like that. Or photos before that, at least in my lifetime. And it was on the cover of a Bob Woodward book called Shadow. And I just started thinking about it then. And that was – I saw that book, I think, during the first season of West Wing. So this idea was incubating for an awful long time.
Well, and this is the picture anyway and the play. This is 1994. And I mean, it's a little frightening to think that many of the people who will be in the audience at this play view it as kind of quaint, almost ancient history. It is not that long ago, but the world was really a different place in 1994.
Yeah, it really was. And it turned out to be like a really interesting moment for these five men in the room. For instance, Ronald Reagan's Alzheimer's hadn't been diagnosed yet. It would be another 6 or so months. You know, but people in the room with him were noticing something, you know.
It's really uncomfortable to hear in places, almost painful.
Yes, it is. And it's meant to be. we try not to get laughs off from it, that's for sure.
Do you think the presidency was a different institution then?
Yeah, I kind of do think the presidency was different then. I think that those men really were all in the shadow of Watergate. And I think that the most recent George Bush presidency kind of changed things just as dramatically as Watergate did.
Well, and Bill Clinton is the sitting president at the time. And, you know, there's a reference in the play to Jennifer Flowers and Whitewater, the quasi-scandals of his campaign. Monica Lewinsky hasn't happened yet. And politics feels almost a little old-fashioned.
Yeah. Yeah. They were still – well, there was a lot of scandal yet in front of us. But yeah, I think it was still kind of a different era. It was an era when, you know, you could get into a room with guys from the other party and it wouldn't be divisive. It would, you know, Washington just wasn't that way then.
One of the earliest scenes in this play when it is just Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter in the room together, they're really kind of waxing philosophical about this strange phenomenon that they have become friends.
Yeah, and a lot that was another interesting thing because I don't think a lot of people know that story, that they became very, very close friends. It wasn't until they were both, you know, out of office for quite a while.
Well, and so how did you go about doing the research on really the candid side of these guys? Because we read a lot about the very official side of presidents, even former presidents, but there's not much that we hear about what they're, you know, what they're like when they're in a room and nobody's watching.
Well, that was sort of the real challenge for me, and I started doing just sort of conventional research. But anytime I found a quote from any of these guys that was unusual or off the cuff or off color, I started collecting them, and I wound up with about 200 pages of, you know, quotes that wouldn't have been said in front of the press or in public during a speech, you know. So that sort of started to give me an idea for the backstage voices of all these guys.
And you also met President Clinton, is that right?
I did. During the first season of West Wing, this was at the height of Monica Lewinsky, and everyone actually initially predicted the West Wing would not fare well. No one cared about politics less at that point because of all the scandal. And what they didn't realize was the West Wing was an idealized version of the White House politics, and Bill Clinton looked at it and thought, It's clearly modeled after me. And so he opened the doors to the West Wing, and you know, we went out for the White House press correspondents' dinner. Everyone got to meet him, hang out in the Oval Office for a little while, and get a tour of places you don't normally get a tour. And that was great. That was cool. But it was also interesting, you know, to hear a guy speak, you know, intimately to a group of people, and you're one of those people.
Well, an intimate is an interesting use of words here. One of the issues, if you will, that some of the other presidents say really strikes them about the guy they were just referred to as 42 most of the time is how intimate he gets. Was that – did you actually experience – was he an up-close kind of talker with you?
Yes, he is up close. He really makes – when he talks to you, he makes you feel like you're the only person in the room that he's talking to. And he takes the time to actually have a significant conversation with everybody in the room. I don't know how he has the time to do it, but – and that was maybe why he was late for everything. But yeah, he really does get into your space. But it's a good feeling.
Do you feel like the interaction that you had with Bill Clinton, did it really – do you feel like it told you about not just Bill Clinton but somehow the nature of the presidency?
No, I think it probably told me more about Bill Clinton. You know, because you can't leave there thinking, boy, I'll bet a lot of presidents aren't anything like that.
There is this kind of ongoing tension throughout this play, this feeling from probably all the presidents about how they feel about the job. Ford saying, for example, that he never really wanted it, but once he had it, he didn't want to let it go either. Did you get a sense, is that the nature of the beast?
You know, I've been fascinated with the presidency since I was a little kid. My mom – I don't remember all of this, but my mom will tell you that I was the only kid in the neighborhood who stayed in to watch the Watergate hearings. So I think I just was interested in the language of that – of all that testimony. I think that the presidency is the worst – I can't imagine a worse job, and I have no – I don't think it's a healthy person who goes after it. And I almost think that if you want it, you should automatically, you know, not be allowed to have it or run for it.
You, as you say, you wrote several episodes of The West Wing, and you have written for House of Cards. And I will now alienate everyone listening by admitting I have not yet seen House of Cards. But from an outsider's take on it, it seems like it is fueled with a different spirit than The West Wing was. Do you see the shows as a microcosm of where we as Americans see politics in our time?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the House of Cards was always regarded, you know, while we were working on it in the early days, as the anti-West Wing. I was, you know, in about 2007, as the 2008 election was ramping up, I was working on a sequel to a movie called The Candidate with Robert Redford, and he was going to do it for HBO. And HBO was deathly afraid of Bill McKay, the character Redford played in the original, was a Democrat. You know, how we're going to alienate our Republican viewers. What are you guys going to do? And I had the idea to play Bob McKay as a third party candidate. And The Candidate and its sequel were sort of a cynical satire on politics. Well, once Barack Obama was chosen as the Democratic candidate, there was no cynicism about our politics, at least from, you know, half the country. And we both knew, Redford and I, that we needed to shelve the movie, at least for a while.
Well, and so do you see us at a point where it is all cynicism on both sides?
Yeah, I'm more cynical than I've ever been, and I've never been cynical about politics. But now I think that the system is terminally rigged.
It is amazing to think that someone who admits to staying home to watch the Watergate hearings as a kid grew up not cynical about politics.
Yeah, I just start – you know, when you read the biographies of any of the presidents, they're inspiring when you know who they were as young people and young men, you know. And so you can't – if you've – any of them that you think of as villains while they're in office, you know, you don't if you do any, you know, real reading about them.
At the same time, when you read this play, it's really striking even though so much has changed since 1994, how much of what goes on in that play really still resonates today? I mean, there are references to the Logan Act, which, you know, couldn't be more timely.
No, that was completely accidental. You know, I just, you know, we needed there to be some conflict in the room. So, you know, I just wrote down a list of all the conflicts these guys had between each other. And one of the fairly recent ones, since Bush had only been out of office just over a year, was this Logan Act situation with Jimmy Carter. So it's just coincidental that it's just blown up again this week.
There is a point in this play where one of the presidents, I think it's George Bush, who says something like, you know, it won't be long before Americans won't want a president who's smarter or better educated than they are. And Jimmy Carter says, God help us when that happens. Do you feel like are we at that point or closer to it?
A lot of people felt like we reached that point with George Jr. And I'm, you know, having gotten to know more about him, I'm hesitant to say that he's that. He may have played that a little bit, I think, but I think he's a much smarter guy than he played to the audience. So I'm afraid of that because I think that's what half the country wants. They don't want someone smarter. They want someone like them.
Do you feel any different about the presidency for having written this play than you did when you went into the process?
I feel like I'd like a break from it. But I'm sure I'm going to get into the next election cycle like I always do. So,
do you think you like any of these guys more than you did before you really knew them? I mean, Gerald Ford comes off seeming like kind of, for lack of a better term, guy you'd like to hang out with.
I love Gerald Ford, and I really kind of wanted this to be his play because I really do think, you know, toward the end, and a lot of people don't know this, but a lot of his critics for the pardon backed off and changed their mind. You know, Woodward and Bernstein were two such people, and he was only quietly vindicated. So I wanted to see if I could vindicate him a little bit more.
And I don't want to give anything away in the play, but by the end, we do think differently about the pardon than we might have going in.
Oh, that's good, I think.
Was it any more challenging to depict the presidency on stage versus what you've been able to do on West Wing or House of Cards?
Well, the West Wing and House of Cards are completely fictional presidents, so you can you can make up whatever you want, you know, within reason. And clearly, like President Bartlet on the West Wing was one kind of president, and President Underwood on House of Cards is a complete – like you couldn't have President Bartlet push someone off a subway train, but you could have President Underwood do that. So – that's something I couldn't do. One of the things I wanted to do that was absolutely critical to me was this time that these five men spent in the room together had to be completely credible. So I had to, you know, what would they talk about? What's across the line that they wouldn't talk about? What kind of things, you know, could they get into? How ugly can it get? So there were some – I wanted this to be a total fly-on-the-wall piece because clearly it's not got a plot. But I want it to be a fly on the wall piece where it's really delightful to be a fly on the wall and really interesting. But I've tried to not give them any Frank Underwood characteristics or President Bartlet characteristics.
And in a way, what it seems like you've done is taken five people who in a way were larger than life and made them maybe the size of life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because I don't think any of them are larger than life when they go home and take off their jacket.
And the irony being that the person that they are eulogizing in their own way is maybe if any of them was larger than life, it was Richard Nixon.
Yeah. And a tough act to follow and not in a good way really for any of them, I think. And the era of expected total transparency that we now live in, for better or worse – started in the wake of Watergate. My 18-year-old daughter just said to me that, Dad, Watergate is the Great Depression for you. And I thought, because that's what she hears about, you know, from me in the olden days. I heard about the Great Depression from my grandparents. So
And now you got me thinking, what was my Great Depression? I have, like 10 years later and where's the beef is all I can come up with.
Yeah, mullet haircuts maybe.
Well, Rick Cleveland, it's terrific stuff. Thank you so much for sharing it and congratulations.
Thank you very much for having me.
The world premiere of Five Presidents is tonight at the Milwaukee Rep. The play runs through April 5th. It was written by Rick Cleveland, who has also written for The West Wing, 6 Feet Under, and House of Cards. There is a link to more information about Five Presidents at WUWM.com. We'll go back to the time of Presidents Reagan and Bush, but talk about the movies of that era when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.